one situation was lambda negative, and the reason why it worked is because in the Hamiltonian the two terms had the same sign, plus sign, and we proved the global existence for lambda positive. So when I say lambda positive or lambda negative, the only importance is whether it's plus or minus one, because you can always eliminate it. But for lambda positive, we prove the global existence if the dimension related to the nonlinearity are not too large. That was our result, remember? And then we observed that, in fact, we can extend it to sigma n large or equal to 2 if the initial conditions are small. That was yes?
There was another problem, sigma n is greater than 2 and less than something.
Yes, that's right. And less than the bound that gives you the global existence. The local existence. Local. Okay? So that was the situation yesterday. And today, I'm going to concentrate on the focusing case. This was called defocusing. This is called focusing. And I would like to concentrate on the case sigma larger than 2 over n, in the case where the initial conditions are not necessarily small. Okay. So it is in the continuation of what we have. So in this case, that sigma n will be larger than 2 and initial condition not small, we will see that it is possible to find initial condition phi in H1 such that after a finite time T1 the L2 norm of this quantity tends to infinity. So this is what we call blow-up solution. So let me state correctly a result. So this is the first section, finite time blow-up. So let me put precisely the... theorem. So suppose sigma n, we are in the case sigma n larger than 2, and here you see lambda equals 1. Okay. So we are in the case sigma n larger than 2. Suppose that I should add here the initial condition. Suppose that the initial condition phi belongs to H1. Suppose also that phi is such that if I multiply by x, this quantity is in L2. In other words, this integral x squared phi squared, dx is finite. This tells you that phi must decrease relatively fast enough at infinity to ensure that this integral is bounded. Okay, suppose also that H, to remember the Hamiltonian, that I can calculate at t equals 0 is negative. So all these are my hypotheses. Then, there exists a time theta finite such that as t goes to theta, gradient psi, the L2 norm of gradient psi tends to infinity, and at the same time, the L infinity norm the subnorm of the solution tends to infinity. So here are the blow up solution that whose certain norms become infinite in a finite time. Okay? So we started with an initial condition in H1, and after a finite time, the solution in H1 becomes infinite. So we're going to prove this theorem. It's amazingly, the proof is very simple. So what is a Hamiltonian? Let me write on with another piece of flat ground. So the Hamiltonian is this quantity. And now we are in the focusing case, so minus. Vx. And we know that this quantity, so h of psi, if you want, it is an invariant. It doesn't change with time. It's equal to this initial condition, to the value of this integral at t equals 0. So, you know, this hypothesis is a hypothesis on the initial condition. Right? So, here we have the difference of two terms. And, well, it can be positive or negative. So, for example, if you take an initial condition, think of an initial condition in the form of a Gaussian. Well, it's easy to calculate the Hamiltonian corresponding to this function, and you will see that if I take A sufficiently large, certain value, around 2 something, then the H of this phi becomes negative, which means that this term, it's 2 sigma plus 2, right? 2 sigma plus 2. So for example, in dimension, well, for example, if sigma equals 1, the critical nonlinearity, sigma equals 1, which corresponds to psi 2 psi, you can calculate these values, and you see that it is negative if, in other words, this term dominates that one. And this happens if the amplitude A is large enough. If amplitude is relatively small, well, this one will dominate. And naturally, you can connect this statement to what was above. You know, if the initial condition is small enough, then this H will be positive. And you are not in that situation. But in fact, there is a little gap between what can be proved. You don't cover all possibilities. So that was just a remark. Now, so let's work with the proof. So we know that they exist. We know that during a finite time, this is again from the existence theorem, during the finite time, let's say 0 t, well, there exists a unique solution t. So this unique solution is in H1. So let me say it a little bit better. There exists a unique solution, which is continuous function of time, its value in H1. And this solution satisfies the conservation of energy we will use it, so that's why I'm writing it, conservation of Hamiltonian, conservation of Hamiltonian. And also, if in addition this quantity is in L2, belongs to L2, so if initially xcx belongs to L2, which means that this integral is finite, then one can write, one defines V of t to be this L2 norm of the solution. And with, you remember we defined this form, this quantity before. It has the name as variance. It is, can be seen as a second moment of psi, and V of t satisfies V of t satisfies you probably remember this calculation. Dv dt equals for imaginary part and d2v dt, second derivative, where there are various ways to write it. One of them is n sigma minus 2. So you have to go back to your notes concerning the invariant quantities. So one way to write it is like this. You can, you know, play around with H and rewrite it in the form well, it's useful to have sometimes one formula, sometimes the other one. So if you want to recover this formula, well, you take the equation above, you multiply by x squared, you integrate by parts, and you recover this formula, and then you do it. You differentiate a second time, and playing around with the integration by part and the equation, you recover. Otherwise, you go back to your notes giving the invariance properties, and using Nusser's theorem, you recover again. Okay, so this is the situation. If in addition this quantity is finite initially, it remains finite as long as the solution exists, and it satisfies its evolution. Good. So now we want to prove blow up. So by contradiction, we will suppose that the solution exists for all time. So we will proceed by contradiction. Sorry?
Why this quantity VFD remains finite?
Well, this is part of the when you prove existence. So first you have the solution in H1, and if you prove that in addition, if this remains in L2, it remains in L2 also. So you. Why is it true? Well, it is again the contraction theorem in the space. You have to do the contraction theorem in the space H1 inter this space of finite variance with XFL2. So the contraction theorem is done. It's not automatically obvious. Well, the calculation is obvious, but the existence is not obvious. So by contradiction, you suppose that the solution exists for all time. And you get the contradiction. So, well, I will propose you two proofs, which are very similar, but they use different quantities. And I think it is, here, of course, I present a very simple argument, which was derived in the 60s in the Russian literature, and then put a little bit more formally 10 years later. But it has been improved in various cases. So depending on the approach, which are very similar, you get the same thing, but I think it's important that you see the two quantities that are manipulated. So the first approach is the following. You say, well, dV dt, the second derivative of V, which is equal to this quantity. We are now in the situation where n sigma is larger than 2. So this quantity is negative. And I can say very simply that the second derivative of V is smaller than HH. And you remember that H is negative also by hypothesis. So, well, you integrate twice, and you will get that V of t, so first V prime of t, is larger, is smaller than 8H t, 4H, so 8H t plus V prime of 0. And V prime of 0 is, V prime of 0, you see it from here, at t equals 0, it's 4 imaginary part of t x dot time. And you integrate the second time, you get 4ht squared plus v prime of 0 t plus v of 0. And h is negative. So we are in a situation that at t equals 0, the variance, which is a positive quantity, is here. So is t, this is v of t. It starts at v equals 0, and it is a piece of parabola like this. Doesn't need to be, it is not necessarily flat here. But it is, you see immediately that V of t become, under this condition, becomes zero at a finite time. So there exists a t1 such that V of t1 is, or approaches zero as t And we're going to show that this situation where the variance might approach zero corresponds, since it is a strictly positive quantity, it corresponds to these norms that I wrote on the blackboard going to infinity, possibly at an earlier time. So let me show you this. Oops, this one is hard. So for this, so we have a T1, this is time T, from 0 to infinity. We suppose the solution exists for all time. Here we have identified the T1, for which the variance approaches 0 as T approaches T1. And now I'm going to use the following inequality. We have that if for any function f for which all these norms are defined, we have this inequality. And I'm going to prove it. It's a very simple formula. So I'm claiming here, suppose that I have a function f for which the L2 norm is bounded, so for which we have for f belongs in H1 inter sigma, so sigma, I was defining here sigma. Sigma is a space of function in L2 whose for which xf belongs to L2. And for all these functions, we have this inequality. The proof is very simple. You write that f2 dx equals 1 over n, n is a dimension, divergence of x, so x is x1, x2, xn, f2, right? Divergence of x is n, 1 plus 1 plus 1, n times. So I write this. Now integrate by parts. I put this gradient on the other side, so I get 2, x dot gradient f star, and I should put real part, right? You agree with me? Just the integration by part. And now by Cauchy-Schwarz, this is smaller or equal to 2 over n, gradient f L2, gradient f L2, x f L2. Okay? It's a very simple formula. Well, this is also called sometimes in the literature the uncertainty principle. All right. So what do we see here? We're going to apply that here. So I can rewrite this for my solution C. Its L2 norm. Its L2 norm is smaller, is larger than n over 2, it's L2, the L2 norm of the gradient, divided by this. So what is L2 norm of f? Well, by it's v square. Square root of two. V is the square of that L2. Now you know that the L2 norm of psi is conserved. It's n of phi, and this lives down there. Now what happens as t approaches t1? V of t approaches 0, and this side of the inequality tends to infinity. Well, it follows that there exists a time which is smaller or equal to t1, such that as t star this time, such that as t approaches t star, this quantity, the L2 norm, tends to infinity. So we prove the first part of the statement. Because yes, but it's an inequality. So a priori, it could happen before. And you know, the interesting thing is that if you do numerical computation and you observe, you know, you take, for example, this initial condition, this very nice Gaussian function, and you look how it evolves. So this is at t equals 0, the solution. This is initial condition. And it evolves. So this peak becomes narrow. The maximum becomes narrower and narrower. Well, we'll see in a minute that it blows up. That the ideal infinity blows up. So it becomes very large, but when this quantity is very large, the variance is still far from zero. So it's a sufficient condition. And indeed, it can be proved also that even if the variance is infinite, solution can blow up. It's simply that the proof is more complicated. So here, and now let's do the L infinity norm. Well, it is a consequence of the conservation of the Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian gradient C so we have H equals gradient, where is it? H is here. H is the difference of these two quantities. So let me write that this norm is equal to H plus 1 over sigma plus 1 right? So it's smaller equal absolute value of H plus, and here I'm going to do a very simple thing. I'm going to take out of the integral the L infinity norm of psi at the power 2 sigma, right? L infinity norm in x. What remains is psi square, which is psi L2. So I'm going to write here and again, this is conserved, so I can write H plus 1 over sigma plus 1, N of phi, this L2 norm, initial L2 norm, C of t, L infinity, at the power 2 sigma. And as t approaches t star, the left-hand side tends to infinity, which implies that this quantity also tends to infinity. This the end of the proof. We have a contradiction with the fact that solution exists for all time. So this is so the good news is that this proof is very simple. The not so good news is that people have tried to improve it, and it is very difficult to improve it. For example, one way to improve it is to say, well, this condition of x phi belongs to L2 is probably not really useful, because if you believe, you know, calculation that people have done, this variance doesn't become zero when blow up indeed occurs. So improvements have been done, and I'm going to quote at least two here. So in dimension one, one can avoid the hypothesis that x phi belongs to L2, which means that you can repeat the theorem with only initial condition in H1. And not only in dimension one, but in any dimension, if the initial conditions are supposed to be radially symmetric. Now, the only result that I know in any dimension, so if we are in arbitrary dimension, well, arbitrary under this condition that it should not be too large, but if we are not in dimension one, arbitrary RP, so any dimension, we understand that there is limitation to have local existence. If you have any dimension and no condition on variance, and no conditions on radially symmetric, so generally, general initial condition, the only result that I know is that one can prove blow up, but a kind of weak blow up. Blow up can happen or in a finite time, like we have described, or in infinite time, in the sense that as t goes to infinity, gradient t of t tends to infinity. All right, so this is a blow up, and I would like, if you remember, I said here one approach. I would like to show you the second approach, which is very similar to this one, but of interest. Yes, or in a fine, in infinite time.
So we cannot tell.
Well, we believe that it is the first case, but we cannot tell. I mean, the proof doesn't say. Now, second approach. In the second approach, one does not really deal with this quantity V, but it works with the derivative, with the quantity that appears here, this imaginary quantity. the second approach is restricted to the case sigma n strictly larger than 2. It does not cover the case sigma n equals 2. While what I presented here was for critical and supercritical. So it's not so much the result, but the quantity that we manipulate that of interest. And the idea is to work with this quantity y of t, which is exactly what is here, minus 1/4 of dz dt, dz dt, which is exactly So, what do we know about y? But we know that y prime, well, we're going to use the same equation, y prime is exactly minus e double prime. So, if you use the second part of the, or the first part of the formula, you get that y n sigma minus 2 you know what, I think I forgot some there's a coefficient here 4 not important, there's a 4. So forget about this. Y prime equals this. And again, H is negative. H is negative. So this is larger. So here you see the condition n sigma minus 2, strictly positive. Y prime is larger than this quantity, and on the other hand, the sign problem above. You are right. Thank you. And now, on the other hand, where is the? Oops, it's gone. On the other hand, by Cauchy-Schwarz, y of t, which is this imaginary part. Is smaller or equal to gradient C L2 V of T 1/2. It's just Cauchy-Schwarz. Now, you remember that N sigma is larger than 2. It's pretty larger than 2. And as before, we suppose the solution exists for all time. And suppose that solution exists for all time in H1. In H1 inter sigma. So what do you see from here? from equation sum, you see that y of t is an increasing function. So it is increasing, and if it is not initially positive, it will become positive at a certain time. So if not initially positive, well, there will be a t0 for which y of t0 that I can call y0 is positive, because it is a strictly increasing function. I suppose you have to suppose that the gradient norm does not approach zero, which means that the solution does not approach the constant. Or does not approach zero either. Yeah. So you have to suppose that the gradient C does not approach. Well, but if it would be true. Say it again. N sigma. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So you have a certain time t0 for which this becomes positive. Can you write it now? And then what? So at the same time that y of t, so for t larger than t0, y of t is positive, right? Positive. And at the same time that y increases, v, the variance, decreases. Now we're going to discuss the situation after t0, because I want y positive. So after t0, at the same time, v of t is a decreasing function. Right? Because y is increasing, so v... So let me see it again. For t larger than t0, y is strictly positive. It's positive, which means that dv dt is negative, so v of t is a decreasing function. Okay? So for t larger than t0, we have v of t smaller than a certain value that I'm going to call d0 square. All right. Okay, so let me come back here now. For t, after this transient period, I have that y of t is smaller or equal to v of t, which is d0 square, so 1/2, gradient c of t. All right. So now I come back to equation star. Equation star becomes y prime of t larger or equal to this quantity, right? N sigma minus 2 multiplied by this L2 norm square. But the L2 norm is an upper bound for y. So I can replace here N sigma minus 2. I can replace this square by y square. Just have to compensate with the constant. V0 square. This is a positive constant. This is a positive constant, strictly positive constant, that I call A. Right? So you remember where we are. We suppose the solution exists for all time. If t equals 0, this is time. We have figured out a certain time t0, after which these formulas are correct. And for t larger than t, I'm going to integrate this inequality. I have y prime of t larger than a positive constant y square. Well, you know that an equation like this, y prime equals y square, blows up in a finite time if it's initiable. So, integrate, you get y of t larger or equal. So you integrate between t0 and t. Integrate. Between t0 and t. So t0 is that t0. What do I get? Y0 1 minus a y0 t minus t0. So I can integrate only between t0 and t, and t must be, of course, smaller than whatever is necessary to keep the denominator positive, right? T0 is positive, a is positive, y0 is positive. So t must be smaller than t0 plus 1 over a y0. So we are almost done. So y of gradient c, well, you remember that gradient c is larger than y. Where is it? Gradient c is larger than y. And y is larger than this quantity. So gradient c is larger than certain constant. I don't need to write it precisely. 1 over And this way, we see that psi of t, when t approaches t, when t approaches t0 plus 1 over y0, right? Gradient t becomes infinite. So again, so that this is a contradiction. So of course, you will tell me that this proof is very similar. It uses the same identities and the same ideas. The only thing that is a little bit different is you learn to work with this quantity here instead of this. And sometimes it is useful. In particular, when you work with infinite variance, let's say in radially symmetric situation, you have still an infinite variance. So you cannot really work with V of t, and you will work with something like that. Not exactly that one, but something like this, where x is replaced by something that does not tend to infinity at infinity. Okay, so this is the proof of blow-up. And the history for in the 60s, 1963, I think, the first papers by Russian physicists who essentially, you know, without all this, who wrote the equation for the variance and then analyzed the variance identity in the context of nonlinear optics. And later there was some papers by Glasser. He essentially rediscovered this by putting a little bit of more rigorous analysis, but it was just a rediscovery of these nonlinear optics papers. And then in the 90s, an effort was made to avoid the finite variance in certain situations, and that was work of some Japanese mathematicians, Tsutsumi. A number of other people. All right. So this is the first section. Now, let's go to section two. We know the solution blows up. We know nothing how it blows up. So the result that I will show is in this form. So the theorem one will be the one that will prove in detail is a special case sigma n equals 2. So think in your mind, you think of dimension 2, sigma equals 1. This is the most, you know, a more interesting case if you want. N equals 2, sigma equals 1. N equals 1, sigma equals 2. So the special case sigma equals 1. Here is the theorem. Assume that blow up occurs. So assume that the solution of the NLS equation, C of T, has its norm, gradient C of T, tends to infinity as T tends to a certain time. Okay? We suppose that the solution blows up, and we're going to prove then, there exists a constant M such that this L2 norm must blow up faster than 1/2 power of theta minus. Okay, so we're going to prove this right? No, but once you know that this blows up, by this calculation that is still here, we see that the L infinity term. No, here you don't use that H is negative. This is just a commutator. So how does it work? So we have an existence theorem from 0 to t, and up to t star, and we know that at t star, the H1 norm of the solution, or the gradient of the L2 norm, tends to infinity as we approach this t star. So we'll do everything, so we'll take t, let t, we can also only do things for t smaller than t star. So for t smaller than t star, we're going to define the new function C1 of S, which is defined like that. 1 over lambda of t, n over 2, psi of x, I'm going to say in a minute what is lambda, C1 is a function of x and s. And here I put lambda 2 over t. And lambda, the lambda of t is exactly this quantity. So what is it that I'm doing here? T is fixed. I don't touch t. T is fixed. Let's take t smaller than t star. So once I have fixed t, I consider C1 as a function of x and s. So s is here. T is fixed. Everything is fixed, x and x are the two variables, okay? And if you remember, these choices are not arbitrary. If you remember the invariance of the nonlinear Schrodinger equation, if you have write a little remark here so that you don't see these choices completely from nowhere, you remember that if C is a solution of NLS, the NLS equation written up there, then if I consider 1 over lambda, lambda is a constant, so 1 over mu, n over 2, let me write here, 1 over sigma, C of x over, of sorry, of lambda, I'm confused, of x over mu, t over mu square, correct? Something? Yeah. So if I take if I have a solution mu, and I rescale x, t, and the solution by this factor, mu is a constant, then this is again a solution. Right? Now remember that sigma equals n over 2, sigma equals 2 over n, so 1 over sigma is n over 2. So what I'm doing here, instead of taking this solution, which is just rescaled by constant, I rescale the solution C by lambda, and I do a translation also, but by a lambda which measures this L2 norm that blows up. Okay, so this tends to infinity. So you think of, you know, psi goes to infinity, L goes to infinity, so I contract to have something that maybe will be bounded, right? Okay, so this is to explain this choice, which is not arbitrary. And of course, this is defined only when this time is smaller than t star, right? Because psi is defined only for time argument smaller than theta. So this is defined for S between 0 and, so I want T smaller, all this smaller than theta, so S smaller than lambda 2 of T, theta minus. All right. Now, what is the equation satisfied? So let's write. So remember, here T is fixed. So this lambda of T is no like this mu. It's a constant because I see C1 as a function of S. So write the equation satisfied by C1. Satisfied by C1. What is it? Well, again, you know, this is a constant, this is a constant. This is a translation, this is a constant. So Psi 1 satisfies exactly the nonlinear Schrodinger equation, E Psi 1, so E I ds Psi 1 plus gradient Psi 1. And 2 sigma should write here 4 over n. Okay, because lambda of t is a constant. So psi 1 is just solution of an NLS equation. And as s goes to and let's calculate. Let's calculate its H1, this L2 norm of C1 of S ds. Let's calculate this. Well, here's Psi 1, right? So you differentiate with respect to Psi. So what do we have? We have the coefficient 1 over lambda n over 2 square, so it's n. So we have this coefficient integral. Now when I differentiate with respect to x, I have two factors lambda, so lambda square, right? I have a factor. I have a factor 1 over lambda, but 2, but a square, so it's a square. And here, what do I have? I have so gradient psi. Let me give it a name, psi, right? Or x over lambda t. Square dx. Right? But of course this lambda n I can move it there, right? To see that this integral is exactly 1 over lambda square So I want to see that this tends to infinity. So T plus S So is it true that this tends to infinity as S as s goes to this limit. So is that true? But I have lambda squared below. Oh, yes, all right, thank you. Sorry. Lambda is fixed. I got confused with that. Lambda is fixed. Thank you, Andre. Lambda is fixed. As S approaches this quantity, we have here the L2 norm of the gradient C at time T star. So this goes to infinity. All right? Okay. Lambda is fixed. Thank you. Now, we're going to see a contradiction somewhere. So, on the other hand, we have C1 of 0, L2. What is it? So at s equals 0, so I put a 0 here, I have exactly 1 over lambda, C of x over lambda, comma t. Let me write this. But again, I move this inside. Right? I move this inside. So this is exactly integral of t of x t square dx, which is exactly n of pi. Okay? Are you with me? So the L2 norm of this C1 at t equals 0. Well, it's exactly the same as the L2 norm of the original psi at t equals 0. And okay, from the definition of lambda of psi, we should see that gradient psi at s equals 0 equals 1. Do you agree with me? Do you agree with me then? So you remember here we calculated at time s. I want to do it at s equals 0. So this is out. Right? But lambda squared is exactly the L2 norm of the gradient of t. So this is exactly 1. Agree with me? Okay. So here we have a function C1 whose L2 norm is CL2 and whose gradient is 1. Now, we have to use an existing theorem. In the same form as the one that we established before, local existence theorem, but this time Kato gave a little bit more precise bound on the solution and the time of existence. So let me state the formulation of Kato. So he says that if I take an initial condition in H1, so take, how should I say? So for all C1, they exist C1, we'll explain in a minute, for all C1 to exist C1 such that if I take the initial condition, H1, smaller than C1, then for all C1, there exists a time of existence. Then for T smaller than T1 of C, the H1 norm remains bounded. For S, so what does it mean? It means that given an initial condition, I will find a term of existence that depends on the size of the initial condition for which the solution remains bounded. So this is an existence, the existence theorem, when I have said precisely that the time of existence of the solution depends on the initial condition. Okay? And here we are almost there to get the contradiction. We just have to put together these various things. So we're going to apply this to this C1. So for C1, we have the H1 norm of C1 at T equals 0 is 1 plus this. C So from this theorem, we know that there exists a time T1 for which the solution remains bounded in H1. On the other hand, I know that as S approaches this number, the H1 norm becomes infinite. It means that this number must be larger than T1. So we have this. On the other hand, we have this. We have gradient C of S, L2, tends to infinity as S approaches L2 of T. Remember, T star is fixed, T is fixed. S is my variable for this new function S1. Thus, well, comparing this and that, we see that necessarily this time must be larger, should be larger than T1. So if you call this C1, I think I should. So this gives you that lambda square of T is larger than a constant, T star minus T. And now you remember that lambda is this L2 norm of the gradient. So we get that the gradient L2 must blow up faster than the 1/2 power of T star minus T. And I will stop here today. Next week we'll continue this chapter with some kind of analysis of the blow-up property of the solution. So this is it. See you soon.